Welcome to your KMUD Weekend News. I'm your host, Gabriel Zucker, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. Tonight, we'll have in-depth coverage of Eureka's new AI policy and Ray Hamill with the sports report. But first, a correction from the April 23rd, 6 p.m. radio broadcast. This is KMUD News.
We'd like to issue a correction. During the April 23rd, 6 p.m. radio broadcast, there was a technical error that played audio from another source over our broadcast. This occurred during remarks we shared from Representative Jared Huffman on a new proposal by a Southern California water municipality to buy the Potter Dam project. While KMUD News does not endorse any political candidates or office holders, we think it's important to bring you information from our local congressman. Huffman's remarks focused on calling the proposal a shady water grab and stating he'd fight against any such proposal. You can find Huffman's full remarks on his Instagram page or via a press release published to the Redheaded Black Belt under the title, Rep. Jared Huffman Warns Against Proposed Eel River Water Export. We sincerely apologize to those who missed the audio. I'm April Lewis for KMUD News.
With AI use well established in the workplace, the Eureka City Council has set new rules on it for city employees. Daniel Mintz reports.
Eureka has adopted a policy on city employee use of artificial intelligence, or AI, with requirements to ensure accuracy, prevent release of confidential data, and prohibit inappropriate content. The Eureka City Council revisited and approved an AI policy at its April 21st meeting, following its review of a draft version last month. Revisions to it include holding users, quote, responsible for the accuracy of any AI-assisted work, disallowing use of agentic or autonomous AI without approval, an addition of language in an AI do's and don'ts guide, warning of, quote, the potential psychological impacts of AI use. The policy requires disclosure of AI use if it has significantly contributed to employee work. Asked about that, Finance Director Lane Millar, who gave a presentation on the policy, cited a hypothetical example.
Let's say you did a strategic plan and you use ChatGPT to develop the strategic plan, and ChatGPT pretty much produced the different sections or chapters of that plan. That in itself is a pretty significant contribution. So despite the fact that it might not be providing the details of each section, it did dictate essentially what you would be focused on. And I think that is relatively easy to identify, or to at least from the, if you're having your department director review your work.
There was discussion on some aspects not explicitly covered in the policy, such as use of photos or artworks to create AI imagery. There was agreement that doing so would be acceptable if there was consent from the original work's creator or subject. Councilmember Katie Moulton has the strongest opinions about AI. She's very wary of it and described it as a transformational technology.
I think AI is an incredibly powerful set of tools, and when something is so readily accessible and so easy to use, it's easy to lose sight of what a big deal it can be. AI is economically and environmentally on par with the manufacturing of gas automobiles. We are making decisions right now that are going to impact our environment for centuries. We are making decisions right now that's going to impact our culture and our economy. Culturally and diplomatically, it's on par with the Manhattan Project. We're talking about technology that can have a really huge impact locally, nationally, and globally.
Councilmember Mario Fernandez focused on the issue of AI replacing human work. He wanted to ensure that the city, quote, would not be replacing any jobs with the advent of AI. There was doubt about how the city could achieve that, and Human Resources Director Will Folger was asked to comment.
We would have to engage with our unions before we implemented something that was likely to take away someone's existing position. And likewise, many other regulations and laws and things that exist that are at issue here as it relates to AI. This policy is not going to be able to go into all that kind of detail, nor would we want it to. But pillars of guidance and expectations being established is, I think, the appropriate measure to take now. And I do think that it does that.
The council supported the policy and approved it with two changes recommended by Moulton, adding the consent requirement for use of artwork and barring use of AI, quote, for tasks outside or above one's professional expertise as depicted in their job description. Demonstrating its pervasiveness, AI use came up again as the council proceeded with other items. In an update on the city's Crisis Alternative Response Eureka program, mental health clinician Jacob Rosen gave an AI disclaimer introduction to his PowerPoint presentation that read, "Some of the images in this presentation were created with generative AI." Another aspect of AI, the massive data centers needed to support it, was brought up by Councilmember Scott Bauer in the future agenda items segment of the meeting. He said, quote, "A lot of cities are trying to get ahead of it and ban them," and suggested the council consider, quote, "some kind of ordinance to prevent data centers in our fair city." The other council members showed thumbs-up support for doing so. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Next, April Lewis has a roundup of recent alerts from three of our local law enforcement agencies.
Starting off with a press release from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. As temperatures rise and more residents and visitors head outdoors to enjoy Humboldt County's beaches, trails, and parks, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office is reminding the public to take simple steps to prevent vehicle burglaries. Spring and summer bring increased activity throughout the county, with more people exploring local recreation areas. Unfortunately, this seasonal uptick also brings a rise in vehicle burglaries, particularly in high-traffic tourism spots like beaches and trailheads. Vehicle burglaries are typically crimes of opportunity. Offenders often decide to break into a vehicle based on the perception that valuables may be inside, making the potential reward worth the risk. These crimes can be carried out in under a minute, often leaving little evidence behind. Lock your car doors, even if you are home, in public places, it may be tempting to leave your vehicle windows down to avoid vandalism. However, this puts you at even more risk, leaving vehicle registration and insurance information accessible to anyone nearby and increasing your chances of falling victim to identity theft, burglaries at your home, and vehicle theft. Take your valuables with you. This includes purses, wallets, cell phones, GPS units, computers, backpacks, and more. Be sure to also remove garage door openers, key cards, and car keys from your vehicle. Be cautious when storing valuables in your trunk. If your vehicle is equipped with a trunk release button on the inside, car prowlers can easily access your vehicle's trunk space. While hiding items in your trunk may reduce the chance for your vehicle to be a target, the action will not completely protect you from theft. And moving on to a crime report involving the kidnapping of a female victim. On April 23rd, at approximately 3:47 a.m., the Humboldt County Sheriff's Emergency Communications Center received a 911 call and multiple text messages from a female victim reporting she had been kidnapped and was hiding inside a gas station bathroom in Blue Lake. While deputies were responding to the area, dispatchers advised that the suspect was 46-year-old Timothy Richard Long, and that he had kidnapped the 35-year-old female victim from outside their residence in McKinleyville and transported her to Blue Lake, where he stopped for fuel. Upon arrival, deputies located Long outside the business and detained him without incident. When additional deputies arrived on scene, they contacted the victim, who was still hiding inside the bathroom. Based on their investigation and evidence gathered at the scene, deputies arrested Long and transported him to the Humboldt County Correctional Facility, where he was booked on charges of kidnapping, violation of a domestic violence court order, and violation of probation. Next, a report of a school lockdown in Eureka from the Eureka Police Department. On April 24th, 2026, at approximately 11:45 a.m., officers with the Eureka Police Department responded to a business in the 3500 block of F Street for a report of a robbery involving a knife. Upon arrival, officers contacted the reporting party, who stated that a male suspect took several items and, when confronted, brandished a knife at the victim. The suspect then fled on foot, and was last seen running southbound on F Street towards Grant Elementary School. Out of an abundance of caution, the school resource officer placed the school on lockdown while officers conducted a safety sweep of the campus. The suspect was not located, and the lockdown was lifted at approximately 12:15 p.m. The suspect is described as a male, approximately 30 years old, 5'8", and last seen wearing a dark green jacket, green sweatpants, black shoes, and wearing white headphones. Lastly, from the California Highway Patrol, a feather alert has been issued for Samuel Sierra. Samuel is 36 years old, approximately 5'7", 140 pounds, and is a member of the Round Valley Tribe, and was last seen in Ukiah on November 11th. He has a noticeable facial tattoo with written script above his right eye. Anyone with information on his whereabouts should email Samuel Sierra's family at helpfindsam411@gmail.com or call 911. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm April Lewis.
In this week's sports report, Ray Hamill brings us details of all this week's big local sports stories, including why the race for this year's Big Five softball championship is shaping up to be one of the most exciting in years, all the latest local high school and college baseball and softball news, some track and field news, and why this weekend will be another big one for the HDNL swimmers.
The race for this year's Big Five championship in softball is shaping up to be one of the most exciting in recent years, and with less than 2 weeks remaining in the regular season, four of the five schools remain in contention. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the exciting Big Five in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including some Big Five baseball news, some Little Four baseball and softball, some college baseball and softball updates, some high school track and field news, and why this weekend will be another big one for the HDNL swimmers. But first up, this year's Big Five in softball is one of the most competitive and wide open in years, with four of the five schools in contention for the league title as we head into the final 2 weeks of action. Not only is the race for the championship one of the most intriguing and exciting in years, but most of the conference games have gone right down to the wire. And that continued to be the case once again this past week, with multiple games decided by the narrowest of margins. On Saturday, conference leaders McKinleyville swept a doubleheader at Arcata, with five of their players combining to hit seven home runs on the day, including two each by seniors Leanna Stumpf and McKenna Sargent. The Panthers won a pair of high-scoring games by scores of 16-8 and 18-5 and improved to 5-1 in the standings with six games remaining. However, three other schools remain right on their heels. Three-time defending conference champion Del North also played a doubleheader at Eureka on Saturday and swept, winning 8-1 and 8-4 in nine innings. The action continued on Wednesday with two more games. Del North made it three straight wins with a 7-5 victory at Arcata. The Tigers showed a lot of resilience, rallying from an early 5-1 deficit with four late runs to force extra innings. But the Warriors would have the last say, scoring twice in the top of the eight, on the way to securing an all-important victory that keeps them in contention. One of the stories of the year in local softball has been the turnaround in fortunes of the Eureka Loggers. After going winless last year, the Loggers could be the most improved team in the area this spring. They quickly responded to the weekend disappointment with a hard-fought one-run victory over Fortuna on Wednesday, winning 2-1. Heading into four weekend games, four of the five schools in the Big Five have either four or five wins each. The Panthers lead the way with a record of 5-1, followed by Del North at 5-3, Fortuna at 4-3, Eureka at 4-4, and Arcata at 0-7. The conference leaders will head to Fortuna for a key doubleheader on Saturday, while Eureka plays two games at Arcata and Del North has a weekend bye. In Big Five baseball, meanwhile, the McKinleyville Panthers appear to be the team to beat. The high-flying McKinleyville boys are 6-0 in the Big Five after sweeping a doubleheader at Arcata on Saturday to close out the first half of their conference schedule. The Panthers won 9-3 and 6-2, stretching their winning streak to 8 straight and improving to 15-1 on the season. Also on Saturday, Eureka hosted Del Norte and swept a doubleheader, winning a pair of one-run games, 2-1 and 5-4. Big 5 action continued on Wednesday, with Del Norte travelling to Arcata and winning 8-3. The Loggers are McKinleyville's closest challengers and are 5-2 in conference play, followed by Del Norte at 5-3, Arcata at 1-6, and Fortuna at 0-7. The league teams will play two more doubleheaders on Saturday. The Panthers will try to keep their impressive run going at Fortuna, while Eureka will try to keep their title ambitions on track at Arcata. In the Little Four, meanwhile, the weather played havoc with the schedule this week, with all 6 of Tuesday's baseball and softball games postponed. The action did resume on Thursday, and it was a good day for the St. Bernard's boys. The Crusaders realistically all but wrapped up the conference championship with a 14-5 win at Ferndale. With the victory, St. Bernard's improved to 7-0 in the Little Four and moved 3 wins clear of the chasing pack with 5 games remaining. The Crusaders also improved to 16-0 on the season. In Thursday's other Little Four game, the Hoopa boys got their first conference win of the spring, beating South Fork 13-6. Ferndale is now 4-3 in conference, followed by South Fork at 2-5 and Hoopa at 1-6. In local college baseball, meanwhile, College of the Redwoods got a boost with a 4-3 victory over Siskiyous last weekend, but would drop the second game of a 2-game stand, falling 8-4. Sior is now 3-20 in the Golden Valley Conference and 5-31 overall. It was a busy week for the College of the Redwoods softball team, which played 8 games over 6 days. After dropping 2 games at Siskiyous on Friday, the Sior women swept doubleheaders at Yuba on Saturday and 2 more at Butte on Monday. Redwoods closed out the spring season with 2 home games against Yuba on Wednesday and split, taking the opener 10-2 before dropping game 2 4-1. Sior finished 7-13 in the Golden Valley Conference and tied for 4th in the standings and was 14-21-1 overall. The Cal Poly Humboldt softball team was also in action last weekend, but lost all 4 of its games at Cal State San Marcos, the number 3 team in the nation. The Jacks dropped to 10-12 in conference and 19-24 overall. The Humboldt women are back in action this weekend, hosting 4 games against rival Chico State. In local track and field, the HDNL season is heating up. The league athletes travel to Del Norte for the 3rd HDN meet of the spring on Wednesday. It was a good day for Eureka speedster Elizabeth Rominger, who won both the 100 and 200 meter sprints. It was also a good day for Arcata senior Skylar Collenberg, who won both the shot put and discus. Collenberg also broke a 55-year-old league record in the shot put at the weekend Brookings Harbour Rotary Invitational meet, throwing 61 feet 11 inches. And rounding out another busy week in local sports, this weekend will be another big one for the HDNL swimmers. Teams from Eureka, Arcata and Del Norte will be joined by Fort Bragg and Mendocino for a meet at Cal Poly Humboldt for the 2nd straight weekend on Saturday. The meet is the final chance for the local swimmers to qualify for this year's North Coast Section Championships and gets underway at 3 p.m. And that's this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
Next, a story originally published by Cal Matters. California blocks Trump administration from withholding homelessness funds, by Marissa Kendall at Cal Matters. California scored a legal victory Monday that, for now, undermines the Trump administration's efforts to drastically cut funding for homeless housing. Changes that would have diverted huge chunks of federal funds away from permanent housing and funneled them instead into temporary shelters and sober living programs will remain suspended after the Trump administration dropped its appeal of an earlier court loss. While the broader case is still being litigated, the new development could provide some reassurance to California counties waiting for the federal funds. Attorney General Rob Bonta said in a news release, quote, "We continue to fight for Californians and the rule of law, and we continue to win. People experiencing housing insecurities or homelessness need the federal government's continued support, not a rollback of assistance," end quote. In November, the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development attempted to change the way it doles out money for homeless services via its Continuum of Care program. It decreed that jurisdictions applying for a piece of about $4 billion in federal homelessness funds can't spend more than 30% of that money on permanent housing. a move that would result in a significant cut to the long-term housing that can resolve someone's homelessness. Last year, California's communities spent about 90% of their federal continuum of care funds on permanent housing. Governor Gavin Newsom's administration quickly joined 19 other states and the District of Columbia in suing to stop the Trump administration's changes. In December, a federal judge in Rhode Island temporarily blocked the changes and ordered HUD to process funding applications under the original rules. The Trump administration appealed that ruling, leaving local government and homeless services providers unsure of what they would be awarded funding for and when. The federal government on Monday dropped its appeal. While the rest of the lawsuit will move forward and could take months to resolve, counties should be able to access permanent housing funds in the meantime. Instead of prioritizing permanent housing, as has been the rule in the past, the Trump administration wants to focus more on shelters that get people off the streets quickly and temporarily, and on programs that require residents to be sober. HUD also attempted to ban the use of federal homelessness funds for diversity and inclusion efforts, support of transgender clients, and use of harm reduction, strategies that seek to reduce overdose deaths by helping people in active addiction to use drugs more safely. HUD did not immediately respond to a request for comment. In a December statement, a spokesperson said HUD stood by its funding reforms. The agency said in an email, former President Joe, quote, Biden's policies harmed the vulnerable people that HUD intends to serve through the grant program. The new framework is the first step toward righting those failures, with increased funding for high-performing programs that have demonstrated real success and accountability, end quote. HUD experienced another legal setback last month when a federal judge in Rhode Island shot down the agency's attempt to upend another smaller source of federal homelessness funding. At issues in that case was a program called the Continuum of Care Builds Grant, which funds the construction of new homeless housing. HUD last year made grantees reapply under a very different set of criteria, which seemed to disqualify organizations that support trans clients, use harm reduction to prevent drug overdose deaths, or operate in a sanctuary city. About $75 million in federal funds had been frozen as that case moved forward. In March, the court found HUD violated the law through its slapdash imposition of political whims. Anne Oliva, chief executive of the National Alliance to End Homelessness, which filed the lawsuit, wrote in a statement, quote, "This ruling is a victory for people across the nation who have overcome homelessness and stabilized in HUD's permanent housing programs. Today's news reinforces a fundamental truth that the work to end homelessness is not partisan and never should be interfered with for political means."
Sea birds, sea turtles, and marine mammals along the California coast can suffer and even die after ingesting plastic, and the lethal quantity is less than you might think. Marine scientist Aaron Murphy with the Ocean Conservancy says it's the size of two baseballs for a sea turtle, three sugar cubes for a puffin, and a soccer ball for a harbor porpoise. Murphy led a study published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that analyzed data from more than 10,000 autopsies and calculated amounts consistent with a 90% likelihood of death.
So we were only looking at sea life, and we were focused on macroplastics, debris that are larger than 5 millimeters in length. And so because of this, we were really interested in those physical impacts of ingestion.
Studies to determine the cause of death found plastic in nearly half of the sea turtles and a third of the seabirds. Murphy says rubber and hard plastics are most fatal to seabirds. At the same time, ingesting just three pieces of a balloon causes a 50% greater chance of their death. Hard pieces of plastic can puncture or tear the internal organs of an animal and kill it, while the gradual buildup of plastic fragments or large pieces can block food from digesting, causing them to starve. The study did not include data on microplastics or analyze animals killed after getting entangled in fishing gear. The annual Earth Day observance fell on Wednesday of this week, April 22nd, but many communities across California are planning activities this weekend. Murphy acknowledges that systemic change and statewide policies are needed to reduce ocean plastics, but it's still a good time to get involved in protecting the environment.
Going out and just removing a few pieces of debris off your local beaches or out of your local parks can make a big difference in helping protect the animals that live around you.
Ocean Conservancy has a new calculator that allows volunteers to determine how many marine animals they help protect by cleaning up plastic trash, available at wildlifeimpactcalculator.org. I'm Roz Brown, California News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Last for our broadcast, here's Caltrans with a public service announcement on local road closures and conditions.
This is a Caltrans Sister Juan Road Information Bulletin for Humboldt County State Highways through the week beginning Friday, April 24th. On 36, expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta. Slide removal continues west of Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. Check Caltrans Sister Juan social media for updates. Expect delays west of Maple Grove and at the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect up to 10-minute delays north of Willow Creek and near Big Hill Road. On 101, in Eureka, a northbound lane closure will be in effect near Truesdale Street on the 27th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. On 169, expect up to 15-minute delays near Martins Ferry. On 211, expect up to 15-minute delays at Fernbridge on the 24th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also expect delays on the 30th. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays east of Blue Lake and from Mason Gulch to the East Fork Willow Creek Bridge on the 27th through the 29th. In Lake County on 20, expect up to 10-minute delays in Lucerne from Grove Street to Ogden Road. On 29, expect delays south of Lower Lake. And in Mendocino County, on 1, expect up to 10-minute delays south of Elk. Expect delays near Navarro Ridge Road on the 27th. Expect up to 30-minute delays south of Westport at the Blues Beach Trailhead to the Overlook. Expect delays at the Wages Creek Bridge and near the Juan Creek Bridge. On 20, expect delays east of Fort Bragg and west of Willits. On 101, expect delays from the Pieta Creek Bridge to Old River Road on the 30th. Expect overnight delays in Hopland. Expect delays south of Willits and north of Leggett. On 162, expect up to 10-minute delays east of US 101. Expect delays at Covelo Road and west of Sandbank Creek. For Delaware County State Highways, on 101, expect delays near Klamath Beach Road. Expect delays near the Klamath River Overflow Bridge, the High Prairie Creek Bridge, and near the Wilson Creek Bridge. Expect up to 10-minute delays at the Dr. Fine Bridge. This work is refined at the time of this recording and is subject to change. For further updates, join us on social media via Caltrans District 1.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Ray Hamill, and April Lewis. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker. Stay tuned in.